Session number 5868, Horton Monday, part 40.
Well, now, I'll tell you one or two little tales. Once especially was when the rations came up at night. I used to bring them along, your parcels or letters. Well, now, just our little bunch, the four of us especially, was my old mate, of course, Sid Carroll, and Joe Scragg and Fatty Odle. Well, you wasn't always together in the trench. There might be perhaps 50 or 100 yards further along from one another. Well, if any of us four ever had a parcel come, it didn't take long for somebody to nip along and they say, oh, old Sid's had a parcel, or old Ortmund has had one, and so on. But on this particular occasion, I had a blooming great parcel come up one night, and it wasn't long before Fatty Odle and old Joe Scragg was come along. They said, oh, we hear you got a big one. Well, we used to sort of share it among ourselves. Well, I opened this and there was a great big cake in it and fags and all sorts of chocolate and, you know, all the odds and ends. And there was two balaclava helmets. You know what they are, those woolen khaki helmets that covered your head by just your nose and eyes and mouth. I thought that beautiful. And I cut the cake up, we shared that out, had a blowout, and I said, well, I said, I don't want two of these. I said, anybody want to buy one? So old Fatty said, I'll buy it. I said, what will you give me? He said, oh, he said, I'll give you $1 for it. I said, all right. So I sold Fatty this balaclava helmet for $5, $1, and then I read the letter, me mother's letter. She said, oh, she said, Sid's mum and me have put a parcel together between you, and I hope the helmets will keep you warm. Oh, blimey, I said. So I said to old Fatty, I said, oh, I said, let's have that back again. I said, that ain't mine. But he said, oh, no. But anyway, after a little bit of leg pulling, I had it back and I give it old Sid. And it wasn't any good at all, because I put it on, you know, cold in the night. And I put this helmet on and old Sid put his on and the tin hat on top. And during the night along the trench came Captain Birchall and Lieutenant Brown, Pinky Brown as we call him. He came along. I done a grin. I thought, oh, but old Birchall will be envious. He was. He took one look at me. He said, take that bloody thing off of your head. I thought, oh, blimey. So, of course, I had to take it all. He said, look, he said, with that on your head, he said, a German could come and put his head over the parapet, tap you on the shoulder, and you wouldn't know he was there. And I never dare wear it no more. Well, to cut a long story short, many, many years later, I found my old kit bag in the barn where I live now, and that was there all moth-eaten. But I didn't wear it, but I brought it home. Well, now, they're silly little things, but I'll tell you one tale now that was really a laugh. We, one night, it was a quiet night, and there was a bit of a moon, not much, just a little bit of a moon, and all quiet, and I wandered along just where our chaps was, my section, and one of them said to me, he said, look, he said, I reckon there's a jerry down here. Because you see, the parapet, sandbag parapet, and it slopes down from there, down into the barbed wire along the front of you. So this chap says, I reckon, he said, there's a jerry down in that wire. And it was quiet. He said, you listen. And we listened, and you could hear some bit of shuffling. Oh, so well. And he says, wait till the moon comes. It was cloudy. You know how the clouds go over the moon at night? Well, the moon, now and again, it just popped through the clouds, and we stood there, and the moon popped through. He says, there you are. He said, look, he said, that's his face. It shone white. I said, oh, hell it is, I reckon. I said, well, now you go along. I said, and go and fetch Lieutenant Brown, Pinky Brown. Well, he came along. We listened. You could hear it, hear him moving. And then when the light of the moon shot through again a little bit, he says, yes, I think it is. He says, go over and see what it is. Oh, blimey. I said, all right. So he said, you have my revolver. I'll have your rifle. So he said, now you go along a bit, then crawl along in front of the sandbags below the parapet till you get to him. Well, he went along and he said, different each side of us, he's told the chaps, he said, don't do any firing, because we used to loose rounds off, you see, every now and again. Don't do any firing, he said, because someone will be out there. So I slid over the parapet, crawled slowly along below the parapet towards where this German was, and I reckon if anybody had put a penny firework cracker behind me, I should have shot 6 foot up in the air, crawling along, and just before I got to it, there was a scuffle, and oh, blimey, when I got right up to it, I thought, well, I slid back over the sandbags back in the trench. He says, what was it? I said, oh, blimey, do you know, it was a biscuit tin. Somebody threw a biscuit tin over the parapet out there among the wire at the bottom, and there was must have been some food in it, and several rats scrabbling about in it. But that's all it was. But oh, that took me a long time to live down. Old Sid Carroll used to very often say, oh well, kid, you nearly had a VC for capturing a biscuit baler and a couple of rats. Most days the Germans would give us a nice little pace in a shell fire, perhaps for a few minutes, 5 or 10 minutes, give us a real pasting. Well, now, it was well known that our artillery had got very, very few shells at all. Very seldom you could hear our artillery using them at all. But the Germans seemed to have loads of them, and it was well known they did at that time. Well, now, our weapons there in the trenches, we had no automatic weapons at all. All our weapons was just the rifle, bayonet, and ammunition, rifle ammunition, and because you had 10 rounds in the magazine and one in the breech, or one up the spout as we called it. Well, each time you use your rifle, you had to draw your bolt back, empty the cartridge case, and so push your bolt forward to put another round in. And that was the main training for speed of loading. Well, now, the only other weapons we had in the trenches there at that time was just a rifle and bayonet and a machine gun section which covered your battalion. And what they used to do to try and deceive the Germans with the machine gun section, one day they'd use it and fire off a number of rounds, several belts, off with the old machine gun, old Maxim guns they was in those days. I used to use that. Perhaps the next day they'd shift it along, further along the trench, and fire from there. So try to deceive the Germans into thinking that we'd got several machine gun sections. They used to use that quite a lot, dodging along the front line. Now, night time and morning, he all had to what they call stand to. Now, as soon as it got dusk, everyone in the trench, whether it was you was turned on or off of duty, you had to line the trench at night, because all battles in those days used to start at dusk or dawn, and in the morning you used to line up again just the same, just before it got light. But there was one good thing about the morning, because they used to come along every morning, sergeant, an officer, with a rum jar, and you had a jolly good tot of rum. Each one, it used to be a little tin, similar to the old-fashioned mustard tin. A nice tot, but oh golly, that did do you good. Used to come along every morning and give you that. During the night, it was often a terrible job to keep awake, especially between 12 and 2 in the morning. Well, when you was on the fire step, you used to lay your rifle on the sandbags, pointing straight across to the German lines. Well, there was rats all over the place because of the food laying about. It soon got swarmed with rats. Well, often I used to stick a bit of cheese on the end of my bayonet and then listen till the rats used to come and nibble the cheese, and then just press the trigger, and that scattered them. Well, now, when you done that, the bullet, you could fire as many rounds as you like. You could do just what you like. You could fire a dozen or none at all. But in the night, you used to fire one now and again to try and keep you awake. But that also happened that if any of the Germans happened to be wandering about filling sandbags or repairing their barbed wire, you could never tell, and those bullets sometime may have caught home all right. Well, now I'll just tell you a little tale about a brattle chap, because in the trenches there was no sanitary arrangements, as you might know. Well, we used to have a little tub, a tin tub. Well, someone had to empty that. It used to be cut at the back of the trench where they used to empty it at night. Well, in the morning, a chap, you'd detail a chap to empty it for you, take it along and put it at the back of one of the slit trenches ready to be cleaned out at night. And there was a brattle chap on this particular occasion. He was carrying this tin tub along, and it was splashing. It's a nice subject, splashing about. So, oh blimey, so I ain't carrying this, so he said, I'll put it on me head. Well, he lifted this tub up, put it on his head. He hadn't gone many yards because that showed above the parapet, above the sandbag. Oh blimey, wasn't many minutes before bang, 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 and there was holes in it. Old Sam, a chap named Sam Hollis from Brattle. Oh, blimey, let that go. Well, you could smell Sam for a week after that. But now it must be getting very close toward the end of this half-hour tape. Well, now, God willing, if I feel like it, another day or two, I'll have a go at another tape, and I'll tell you then how my old mate got busted up and finished, because he had a real bad smash-up and send home operations, and he never come back to the war again. So all being well, in a day or two, if I feel like it, I'll have another go. Yes, it so happened that there was time when he came round. The other night I'd got a few minutes left on this tape, so I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll wind it up by talking about discipline. Now, us chaps was all young civilian chaps, just joined up, so we really was part-time soldiers. But no, the high command treated us as though we was real old soldiers, the old-fashioned discipline. Now, I'll just give you an instance how it was early on with old Fatty Odle, the discipline. Now, we was allowed to write home, and your envelope, you was allowed one every so often, what they called a green envelope, and you could write all private matters in that, such as writing to your wife or anything like that. So it was supposed to be private, and they would not be censored. In other words, they trusted you that you wouldn't put anything in wrong. And your ordinary letters you left unsealed so that they could open them and look at them. Well, now, on this particular occasion, poor old Fatty wrote to his girl at Bradwell, and it was a girl he was courting. As a matter of fact, it was old Joe Scragg's sister. And eventually, he married her, had a large family and so on. But Fatty wrote home to his girl, told her where we was, how we got on, the times we was having, the laughs and jokes, and the times in the wood and so on, all the lot, and just where we was. Well, now, by some chance, they opened Fatty's green envelope. That caused it. And do you know, when we went out to rest, you go to rest to a village behind the lines every so often for a week or so's rest. And Fatty had a court-martial for that. And he was sentenced to so many days tied to the wheel. Now, every day he had to spend so many hours tied. Didn't matter whether it poured or rain or whatever it was. Now, the wheel, in those days, of course, there was no motor transport or very little. But the wheel was an old gun carriage or a transport wagon, horse-drawn. And there was a man at Bradwell named Teagle, Charlie Teagle. He was in the band, bugle band. Major. Well, it was his job to tie old Fatty up every day in the rain. He used to tell us, after the war finished, when we came home, he always used to say, it used to make me bawl, to tie old Fatty up in the rain. Well, of course, we used to have a laugh about it, but it wasn't too good for Fatty. He was tied up and he had to serve that sentence just because he told his gal in his letter where we was. And that was nothing really, because the Germans knew us. We used to shout at one another, so they must have known us. But that's just a small instance of what discipline was. Well, now later in the war, towards the end of the war, old Fatty done a lot of good things. And although I don't believe in heroes or cowards, I've stated that many times, but old Fatty, he done a lot of good things. He was a stretcher bearer. He was granted the military medal and the Italian Croix de Guerre for what he did out there, because our battalion went there later in the war. I didn't go because I'd been wounded and was sent to another regiment eventually. But that's what he had, and it was well known among the chaps in the battalion that if it hadn't have been for that court-martial that Fatty had, he would have had the VC. Now, that was the general opinion of all of them in the battalion. After a few days, I'll start on tape number 2 to pass the time away. Now, there was always 3 things prominent in your mind of a soldier in the trenches. The first was that you would be able to get a nice little blighty. That meant a wound of some sort which brought you back to England for a spell in hospital, convalescent and so forth, especially if it should be a VAD hospital, because they was Very, very nice, much more than the others. Now, the second thing was, if you could only get your leave, perhaps 10 days or so leave in England. That was the next thing. But finally, the third thing, of course, was you could get a spell from the trenches to a village behind the line somewhere. Now, it is that which I'm going to talk about now for a few minutes. We was relieved there at Plug Street Wood, as I've told you so much about, and we were sent back for a rest to a village, near as I can remember, it was called Romerin, some name like Romerin. Well, I'm sure it was. And we went there for a rest. Now, that was just an ordinary country farming village. And all the people there were still living there and working on the land. Now, on the way there to that village, it often happened in the daytime, and no one, no German could ever see where you was at all. But it often happened that when a regiment was being relieved, it didn't matter about daylight then to back there, along this particular part of the road, often, just as the regiment was going along that part, the Germans would shell it pretty heavy. Now, that was very strange, and it took the intelligence department some time to find out the reason why. But they did find out. And what was happening was that on a very high hill, some distance away, was an old windmill. And every so often, not every day, but every so often, when people was being relieved, the sails of that windmill were set in a certain position, which told the Germans, and they could see that, where and when the troops was going by that particular part of the road. And they found it out, and they found the Frenchman in this old mill, and they were shot for it. And after that, there was no more shelling at all along that road, not at least while we was there, and I believe that actually finished it, because that was clear proof of what they was doing. Well, now when we got back to this village, we was all billeted apart in old farm buildings, and they was ever so comfortable. Great big farm sheds there was, barns, and there was straw in all of them. The straw was perhaps 4 to 6 foot stacked high all over it, bar cutting straight through the centre, and we all used to sleep on top of that straw as warm and comfortable as could be. Well, now at night time, evening time, I used to have a couple of old storm lanterns hanging in the barn while we used to sing songs and all happy and merry. Now, there was one chap from Wolverton, I think I told you, he was on the cooks, old Phil Wills. Now, he was a blooming good singer, and he got an old, not a banjo, tambourine, or what the hell they call them, I don't know, and like an old-fashioned banjo thing. Oh, blimey, he used to play that and sing, you know, the old songs, you know, Mother McCree, and all the old songs, Scotch songs, and then the more modern ones, Tipperary, and all that sort of thing. But eventually, old Phil, it done him a good turn. He used to be a good singer around here before the war, and, you know, give turns. Well, he ended up in a concert party, and he kept in that right to the end of the war. That was very similar to what in the last war they called Enser. Well, he was one of them party, and he stuck that right through. Well, now, we used to go out at night in the village to these estaminas and Well, I think every other ace was in the stamina with the troops backwards and forwards. You'd go in there and I always used to have a blooming great pan there frying eggs and chips. And us little party, us four, I've told you before who the four are. We used to go there and sit and scoff eggs and chips and champagne. That was only a few coppers, as they say, and there's a bottle, I think they made it themselves. Used to have champagne and vin blanc, as they called it, and oh, blimey. Used to have a binge up and want we bad the next day. But anyway, we had a lovely time there with that. Now, there's another thing we used to do. Well, really, it was the first thing we did when we got there. Was strip out and have what they call a delousing stunt. That was shaking all the lice and tackle out your shirt and under your tunic collar used to be white with lice. And then along came, always the same, like a blooming great tank it was, similar to these old oil tanks, long barrel thing. And all of you then used to strip out, stark naked, put your clothes in a bundle, and they used to put it in this tank, steam it up. I don't know what they did to it, but anyway, when they got it out and threw it to you, it was all steaming hot, but it killed all the lice and that, and give you a right clear start again. Now, we had all that to do, and we really enjoyed it. Nice and comfortable holiday there. Well, while we was at this village, because while we was enjoying ourselves there, the officers, some of them, used to pop off for a day or a couple of days in Paris, have a break there. Well, of course, that was nice for them, same as it was for us here, so that was all quite in order. But now, whilst I was there at this village, you always had a padre to every battalion regiment had its own padre, parson. Well, he persuaded a few of us, or asked us to, which I did, was to be confirmed. Well, he gave us a few lessons. There was, I think, about half a dozen or so of us. But I was the only one out of our little mob. And I said, yes, I would be. Because I'd got the back of my mind, I thought, well, I might not last long next time up. But anyway, I was confirmed at a old farmhouse. Now, when it eventually happened, it was by it was a Bishop of St. Petersburg or somewhere, or any road, a South African bishop came and performed the ceremony, and I was confirmed there. Now, I've still got that card, but now I'll drift on now. We'd already, after several days, we'd enjoyed ourselves. We'd blewed all the pay in almost, what we'd got, because we was paid then. And then we was ready then to go back up to take over again at Plug Street Wood, which we did. We went back there and settled in again as usual. Well, now I'm going to start now and tell you something that I should be criticized for, and a good many won't believe it. But it don't matter about that. I'm going to tell you this, and I've said it before on tapes that I've made long ago. I say long ago, 3 years ago. And I stated on there that I don't believe there's such a thing as heroes or cowards in that war.